But actually what we were able to do was use that data to identify customers who hadn't shopped but should have shopped. What that means is that rather than communicating to all of the ones that have, you're communicating to the ones that haven't and bringing those ones in. So protecting margin, making your marketing spend more efficient, and actually targeting the people who you want to do something different.
Hey everyone, CK here, and welcome to our new podcast, Half Wasted. In this podcast, we discuss with some of the leading marketing effectiveness professionals about why John's quote is so prevalent to this day, how data can help marketers to make more informed decisions, what kind of use cases and business results data-driven marketing enables. Welcome back to Half Wasted. This week, we have CRM wizard Nicola Fox with us here. I must say this will be one interesting episode. Welcome, Nicola.
Hi, really good to be here.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm really well, thank you. Yeah, just enjoying the last days of summer, so it's all going well.
Nicola, you have been working within the field of marketing for quite a while now. You must know John's quote.
Yeah, absolutely.
You think it holds true to this day?
Well, in some regard, yes. I mean, obviously, we've come a long way in that time. And I wouldn't say that we, as marketeers and as business leads, have no idea how effective our marketing is and whether our spend is driving the kind of performance that we need. But I still think there are big gaps in our understanding of what it's actually doing. Way too much focus still on channel performance, which ultimately leads in kind of, you know, some good weeks, some bad weeks, but ultimately, are we really improving the experience of our customers?
You have a kind of long career in especially the kind of CRM and customer data side. You've driven business for various companies, but quite recently you started your own consultancy. Like, could you tell a little bit about maybe the paths and factors leading to this decision?
Yeah, no problem. Well, I mean, first and foremost, I never kind of thought when I grow up I'd like to be a consultant. So it wasn't really by design that I've ended up in this position. But I thoroughly enjoyed a career in lots of different retailers over the last 20 years and lots of different marketing roles, giving me a kind of really good breadth of knowledge across all of those different channels. But it was really in the area of loyalty and CRM and retention marketing that I felt that I kind of landed in my zone of genius, I suppose, the place where actually I thought I really love this and I feel like I can make a difference. And I was, you know, really enjoying my career in that space. And then just changes at home, you know, life takes over sometimes and things that are in place to support your family and to support you being able to work just changed. As well as professionally, my recognition of the fact that, you know, sometimes marketers are held back by what they are expected to do rather than what they could do. And so when I found myself needing to make a change from a personal point of view, it gave me that opportunity to think, well, if I was to work from home, if I was to work for myself, if I was to try and make a difference, where would I like to make that difference? And I felt very strongly that what I would like to do is work with marketing teams to help them take that strategy that's in their head, take those ideas that they'd like to do, and actually show them how they could make that happen. And yeah, so that's how I find myself here today.
When we talk about CRM and especially kind of gathering the customer data, how would you say this sector has developed over the, let's say, few recent years?
Yeah, well, I mean, I started working in the loyalty space just over 10 years ago. And at the time, I was working with a big high street retailer in the UK who, you know, they were very, very successful. They really understood their business. They were very product and customer service led. And actually, they were getting an awful lot of things right. And they had a lot of knowledge about what they sold and how much they sold and how much margin that made. But they had no real idea about who was buying it, how often they were buying it, and what opportunities they had with those customers to develop them into loyal customers. And the space that I was working in was health and beauty. And of course, with health and beauty products, naturally, there is a massive opportunity to retain those customers. The requirement back then, 10 years ago, was to simply get data about customers. We didn't have any, being a predominantly predominantly high street retailer, we didn't have that data. And so the precedents really, particularly in the UK, were things like Boots Advantage Card, Tesco Club Card, and Nectar Card, where it was an exchange with customers of, if you give us data about what you're buying and who you are, we will give you rewards in exchange. And so very often the models revolved around that kind of data collection. But what I've seen over my time in that space, certainly in the last 5 years, has been this real move away from that kind of very obvious literal transaction between customers and retailers, and actually the opportunity to start collecting behavioural data, and as well as transactional data and customer data, to enrich that understanding of how customers are behaving with your brand. So rather than just understanding what they're buying, how regularly and how much they spend, but you're now understanding how they behave when they come to your site, or how they behave when they interact with your brand, where they see your marketing, where they don't see your marketing, where they're engaged, where they're not engaged. And all of those things combined give you a much richer idea of how loyal they are to your brand rather than how regularly they shop. And so that's really come about through the fact that people have lots of data now. The growth in online retailing has really kind of improved that. The fact that technology is now available. So, 10, 12 years ago, technology wasn't available to be able to help marketing teams actually harness that data and use it day to day. It was a very laborious process. But now data is at our fingertips, and we're able to use that day to day, hour to hour, to make a difference to our marketing activities. I think the one thing that, still needs some improvement is around business adoption, business mindset, and the culture that is needed in businesses to make this kind of come to life.
What do you think some or most marketers then struggle to understand and gather the right kind of CRM data? Because we have, as you mentioned, we have the technology now, and we have lots and lots of data. Is it because we have wrong type of data, or is it because we fail to kind of connect this customer data with the business data to actually get actionable insights?
Yeah, I think there's like a combination of all of that, and depending on what type of organization you are, the problems can be different. So brands that have a lot of heritage, they've been around for lots of years, they will probably face challenges like their data is in lots of different places, lots of different systems. Some are legacy systems, some are more up to date. Some control things that you just don't want to touch and break because it's the whole operation of your business. And some are more easily changed and influenced. So I think that absolutely still exists for many, many retailers today. And it's one of the biggest challenges in being able to not just kind of get to the heady heights of a single customer view, but actually be able to do something with the data that you've got. But I think brands that are maybe younger than that and have maybe built up around an online presence, and so maybe don't have come up some of those restraints about legacy systems and aged records, they are simply finding that they've just got so much data and it's all over the place. And if they have been quite tech adoptive and kind of brought lots of technology on board to sort of improve their growth, then what they might find is that those different platforms are reading different things and they're not necessarily got the same message or the same output or the same results. So I think you have to kind of take a view, and this is partly why I do what I do today and work with businesses one-to-one. I think you have to look at the circumstances within your business and try and really think about what's holding us back and how do we solve that, because it can be quite different.
Which one do you have the most as the customer? Do you have the kind of big old mammoths, or do you have these more younger or kind of agile companies that seek help? Do you have a clear kind of allocation?
I think most of the time, mainly based on my, you know, the sort of retail footprint that and the brand footprint that I've got, it tends to be kind of retailers who've grown up over kind of 20, 30, maybe sometimes more years. Their online business has been secondary to their retail business, their high street business. And they've now seen exponential growth over the last 2 years. They want to try and harness that and really kind of make a difference and swing the balance, I suppose, from being a high street retailer to being a serious online retailer. But joining those dots between the two and making sure that you, as an organization, as a marketing team, you understand that it's the same customer, just different channel, is what they're trying to solve for. And so that's predominantly where I find myself working.
A lot has changed quite recently due to kind of the COVID situation and now the big push to online environments. So do you think more companies are starting to recognize that data can be actually powerful when harnessed right?
Yeah, absolutely. I started working as a consultant 3 years ago, and it was about a year before everybody started working from home and the pandemic started. And I've seen massive changes in terms of not just the interest in CRM, but the level of investment that people are wanting to make and the hunger and the impatience to get this right as well. And I think probably the people that work in CRM and loyalty saw this coming. So we are kind of sort of sitting here thinking, kind of told you so. But, you know, the sort of circumstances that we found ourselves in the last couple of years have really driven that. We've needed to show as brands that empathy, that we understand, that we get that people are stuck at home and that they are maybe using online services for the first time, or they're maybe coming to you as a brand for the first time because their normal brand can't service them in the way that they need. And so those companies will have gone through a phase and a period of time where they've acquired lots and lots of new customers through their hard work, but also through the circumstances that the world found itself in. And they're now looking at those customers and thinking, but they don't look anything like my normal customer. So how do I best put things in place to make sure that I keep hold of them? Because they're a huge opportunity. They've come to me, I've you know, done the work to get them. So how do I hold on to them? Because what I'm doing already is not going to work for this group of customers. That plus the combination of the fact that I think because it was so sudden, companies weren't always set up to be able to cope with it. And so there's been that strong realization. We really need to get our operations in place. We need to make sure that we can fulfill these orders, that we are there, that we are present, that we are noticeable, and that we're showing customers that we've got what they need. But then also that kind of follow up then, the ability for marketing teams to see who came to them, see what they're doing, and then actually take good action to retain those customers in the future.
Is there like a common factor then when you start these consultation projects and start to help these retailers and companies, like a repeating pattern that you can use in leveraging the data in the decisions? Like, do you find something common in each customer, or is it always customer specific where they struggle with the customer data?
I think there are definitely patterns. To some degree, you're always going to be limited by what you can measure and what you can produce a report about. And very often that is, specific actions around transactions, visits, things like that. So some of the softer metrics sometimes get overlooked because what we're really measuring is, have I managed to get this group of people to shop again in a period of time and spend some more money? Whereas actually what you're trying to influence is all of that, but also brand consideration, advocacy, referral rate and engagement. So because obviously between the gaps in purchases, you need to keep those customers interested in what you're doing, passionate about what you're doing, and telling other people. So to some degree, they are hindered by what they can measure. And so, you know, I can tell you this about my customer, but there's all of this that I still don't understand. And I think the brands have to close the gap on doing that, really, so that they're really, really clear on, this is my group of loyal customers. This is what makes them loyal. And this is therefore what loyal behaviors look like in my business. At that point, once you really, really understand that about the people that come naturally to you and who you would call my natural customers, you can then start to make comparisons with the group of customers that you've acquired. Because the likelihood is that there will be some similarities, but there will be some differences. What we've got to remember is that in the last 2 years, many customers have placed orders online with brands that they would never have chosen before, simply out of desperation, because they couldn't get it anywhere else. They needed it, and they needed it at home. And so it's not that those brands are irrelevant to that group of customers, but it's so important that they understand their relevancy. And so rather than talking to them as, oh, you've chosen us, you need to talk to them about, you know, this is why you came to us. This is what you bought. This is how you've, you know, engaged with our brand. So some similarities, some differences, but I think it's really important to understand first and foremost about your existing customers so that you can make comparisons with new ones.
Just like on top of your head, do you have some sort of preference? What do you like to measure, or where do you see the biggest value in this when you mention these softer metrics?
I would always say referral. I think, you know, outside of the things that your customer is doing directly with you, one of the biggest indicators of brand advocacy and experience is referral. And of course, there are other things like, you know, NPS and, you know, satisfaction after the transaction. And they are very, very important. But I think, you know, I always sort of consider that if I've purchased something from a brand, and then I loved the experience and the brand and the product and everything that went with it so much that I thought, do you know what? I'm going to stick my neck and my reputation on the line and tell somebody else about it, and encourage them to buy something from that brand as well. Then that's a pretty strong indicator that I've enjoyed the experience that I've had. And of course, you know, yeah, there are incentives in place for things like that. And so there will be some customers who do it just to simply get, you know, a saving on the next order. But I think, you know, outside of direct transactions, the referral one is probably the most interesting and the most actionable from a marketing team perspective as well.
At the same time, it's also one of the maybe more difficult ones to measure. When you have these surveys about how likely would you recommend this product, they're always a bit cliché-ish. So how would you measure referrals?
Well, there are definitely companies and products on the market to, you know, to help with that. And I think that's an important step. You know, so if you believe that you've got a business and a brand where referral might be important to you, I would definitely investigate getting a partner on board to help you measure it. Because like you said, it can be a bit cliche. It can be a bit thoughtless because, you know, you're at the end of the transaction. You've got all the way through the checkout. You just want to leave, don't you? You don't want to kind of fill anything in or click some stars or anything like that. So I think what's really important is to work with a specialist who can help you design what that journey looks like. So don't always feel like it has to come straight after the transaction. You know, give your customers time to breathe. They're human, they're people. And actually, you want them to experience the whole journey anyway. So, you know, give them that time to get through the checkout, place their order, get their order delivered, and then start to kind of weave in those messages about how likely they would be to refer you, or, you know, incentivize them to spread the word. And I think you know, if you get the timing right and you don't feel like everything has to happen whilst they're on site that day, and you allow customers to be people as well as visits and, you know, users, then you can tend to get a better result from things like that.
What do you think about the gathering the customer data? One big trend and kind of issue lately has been the IDFA and third-party cookies ending at some point. Do you see this process a threat to the CRM systems, or is it a push for a better direction now that we have to actually make more use of the first-party data?
Time's going to tell, I suppose, isn't it? As a CRM loyalty retention specialist, I'm not sitting here worrying every night about this change. I think one of the things that the last 10, 12 years has taught me is that good quality data and data that you have permission for is far more valuable than volume. And now performance marketing teams probably will be a little bit more concerned, and I understand that. But I think really what it's driving us towards is a position of really thinking about how we drive excellence in this space. So, yeah, okay, 25 years ago, you know, it was good enough just to have some data and be able to use it. And if you were a smart enough business, if you were a technology adoptive enough business, you could do that. You could really make some improvements. But the world's moved on and our customers deserve better, I think. You know, we all understand that transaction of data in exchange for reward or relevance or personalization. And we know what brands are doing with our data. So I think it's right for us to be open and honest and you know, responsible about that. I think it drives a few things. So it means that we are really going to have to get clear on how we collect that good quality data. So it's no longer good enough just to have some. And just to kind of grab it at every opportunity, we need to really think about where in that customer journey we are collecting that data, why we're collecting it, and how much data it's reasonable to ask a customer for at that point. Really good, sound GDPR compliant stuff, yeah? So we're all doing that. I think secondly, it's about thinking, okay, so when I collect that data, it is really valuable from that moment on. So how am I collecting it in my business so that I can serve as many people around the business with that data? So no longer thinking about, oh, well, the data belongs to the business insight team, or the data belongs to the CRM team, or the data belongs to the finance team. Data needs to be democratized in businesses so that everybody has equal access to it and everybody can use it to influence the performance of their area of the business. So it's all of that stuff that we've been speaking about making sure that it's not in silo systems, there's not legacy systems that are holding things back. You're really thinking about, how do I hold this really valuable asset in my business? And then thirdly, thinking about, okay, so I've now got this data, how am I going to make sure that I'm using it consistently across all of the teams that use it? Because one of the things that will really impact performance through these changes is if teams and marketing teams specifically don't realize that it's no longer about channel, it's about customer. And it's the same customer who is experiencing your brand in all of those different in those different channels. And so that journey, that experience, those messages need to be really kind of consistent across all of those channels, rather than you just having a fight for the conversion.
When you've seen lots of these companies and marketing teams, how savvy would you say these marketers then are about understanding the whole customer journey?
I think there's a long way to go, and that's partly why a large part of my work is about culture and business mindset and team structure, because we recruit people based on their skill set, and very often those skill sets are grown up and developed in channel specific roles. So we recruit PPC managers and we recruit email marketing managers. We're not yet really in a place where we start to recruit people who specialize in new customer adoption. We don't specialize in recruiting people who focus on loyal customer retention. We try to sort of pull all of that together into, well, you look after this channel and how whoever comes through it. And I think that's the big change, really, is we need to start structuring our teams and our organisations and our decision making around customer and what's special about this group of customers today, and really kind of get people from around the business who influence all of that customer journey to really start thinking, how do I make the experience all the way through great for this group of customers? And I think when we get to that stage, that's when, you know, some really kind of cool things will start to happen. There are some companies who are doing this, but it's very few. But I think, you know, the drive to online, the drive to the fact that everybody wants to improve those experiences for people, that, you know, in some industries, price is no longer a differentiation. We have to start thinking about those things and really start sitting around tables talking about customer experience rather than channel performance.
Yeah, and I think it's a welcome change in a way that most companies claim they're customer oriented, but when you check these open applications for the marketing department, it's usually growth hackers and, just like as you mentioned, PPC experts, which all tend to then look at the single conversions online, just trying to optimize that, try to push people, even though it wouldn't be the core audience or kind of your most loyal customers, to the site, just to kind of convert that one sale instead of thinking, can we find customers that actually value the brand and actually like us, and then in the long run could advocate us, which, as you mentioned, is one of the most powerful ways to actually market the brand.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, channel performance does still come into it, because we do need to understand, you know, going right back to the start of our conversation, we do need to understand, you know, the effect that our spend and our marketing spend is having. And so it's not about making channel irrelevant. It's about saying each channel contributes to the experience that the customer has. To what degree depends on, you know, what we do and who the customer is. But let's not think that, you know, the solution is to put all of the marketing budget into one specific area, because on paper that looks like the best performing, because actually all of those other engagement channels are really kind of driving that interaction and that awareness and that consideration. And they are so important in saying, okay, come to me instead of my competitor.
In addition to your kind of consultancy work, you also work as the head of CRM at Missguided. How would you say within the retail sector the recent years have changed the game?
Yeah, so my time at Missguided was great. I learned a lot there, and you know, that was really the kind of time where I saw the potential in using data to drive CRM and loyalty, and actually being able to do that real time, day to day, and influence some of the trading decisions. So I think, you know, speaking about the time that I was there, we went from a place of, you know, simply doing the same thing on the same day to the same customers every week. And It wasn't broken, don't get me wrong. You know, there was still a lot of interest in, you know, big promotions and big money off the outfit that you wanted for the weekend. But what we knew was that we had, because it was a pure play business, there was a lot of data that we just weren't using to try and influence our performance. And like I said, you know, in some businesses I've worked in, customers who shop regularly with us were just as likely to shop with our competitors because price wasn't a differentiator. And actually loyalty to us, so what we would measure as loyalty, would actually mean kind of prevalence in the marketplace. It didn't actually mean that there was a distinct loyalty to that brand. So we had to find different ways of influencing the rate at which customers returned to that brand. And one of the biggest changes that we were able to influence through the use of this technology, through the use of day-to-day today, was to identify customers who had shopped, but then maybe hadn't shopped for a while. Now, that's CRM 101, okay? But what most customers do, what most, sorry, marketing teams would do, is wait until that customer hadn't shopped and then start to try and rescue them back. Start to send lots of communications out to them to say, oh, we've missed you, come back and save 50%. You know, if that's the space you're in, that's the space you're in. But actually what we were able to do was use that data to identify customers who hadn't shopped but should have shopped. What that means is that rather than communicating to all of the ones that have, you're communicating to the ones that haven't and bringing those ones in. So protecting margin, making your marketing spend more efficient, and actually targeting the people who you want to do something different. Equally, when you get into that space and you understand who has done the thing that you wanted them to do, you can then identify the next thing that you want them to do. So you're not just constantly going on this cycle of all of these people I want to tell to come back and shop, but you can start to differentiate and say, these people haven't shopped, let's get them to shop. These people have, let's get them to do this or this or this. And I think that, you know, it sounds very simple, but that was a huge change in the way that the business was operating and in terms of how the technology and the use of data was able to help the marketing teams be more efficient.
And that must have shown in the results after you kind of made the changes, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, equally, it wasn't just in the channels that I was managing. So, you know, that was predominantly email and SMS and push notification. But it was also showing up in some of the other channels like paid social and PPC, because when you know that these customers should have done something but haven't yet, they are far better gamble for paid social and PPC than customers who, yeah, they haven't shopped in ages, but they're unlikely to shop again. And so actually, you know, in being able to identify who they are, being able to take action on that, but also then being able to share that data across all of those different channels, really kind of means that you can start to be very specific about who you're communicating with. And not least, just talking about channels as well, you know, understanding that channel engagement. So if I have a group of customers that I want to get back to site, where am I most likely to be seen for that individual customer? So, you know, it really kind of boiled down to, and it's the thing that I carry forward into the work that I do now, it's identifying the right customer, identifying the right time, and showing up where she is. And if you can do those three things, you've got a far better chance of improving the results.
Looking back, hand across heart, would you say that misguided marketing spend was half wasted?
Half wasted, I wouldn't say, but what I would say, and it's the same for any retailer, if I was sitting here, it's not specific to misguided, that the spend was always very well informed, but the performance and the results coming back were always a little bit sketchy. And so, you know, nobody spends money, you know, let's get this right. You know, retailers are smart, you know, that's why I've spent 20 years in it. They don't spend money where they don't need to spend money. And they have a good instinct for what works and what drives traffic. But I think there were lost opportunities on converting that traffic, which could be improved by making sure that, you know, we'd got that journey right. But then also understanding what did we set out to do and what did we actually do and how are we going to change that going forward? I think where the waste comes is that we just kind of go, right, well, we drove some traffic, so let's just repeat that and repeat that and repeat that. I think if we could kind of close that circle, get those results back and that performance understanding back, then actually we would really start to narrow the percentage of wasted spend. Vague enough.
That's kind of a political answer.
It's hard, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, undoubtedly, there's a lot of wasted marketing spend, isn't there? Because, you know, the ability to really understand how that's performing is really complicated. You know, it's not just about one metric, but we always try to measure with what we've got rather than what we're trying to understand. And I think that's why. So it's why I said at the start, it's not unique to Misguided. It's not unique to any of the brands that I've worked in. It's a common problem, because if we can only measure certain things, we can only measure certain things.
And then you get trapped by that metric.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I thank you so much for kind of getting to the show and kind of providing us the insights from the CRM point of view.
No problem. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
In our next episode, we'll jump into the world of cryptocurrencies. We'll find out how to market a product that's heavily restricted by regulations and how peers can unlock the greatest potential when it comes to marketing. Make sure to tune into this special episode by following the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. My name is Chris Kervinen, this was Halfway Instead, and I'll see you in the next episode.